Do you feel that in the wind, Rob? And there are other things I wanted to talk with you about. But, Congressman, do you think that is that the next quote-unquote agenda to somehow force the Catholic Church to perform gay marriages in their cathedral, that some of the synagogues, and there are different thoughts on gay marriage within the Jewish community, but within LDS temples, within situations like that, that a religion be forced to do that?
There's always that fear. Let's hope not. And I think that was probably one of the motivations behind the law that Utah passed in the recent legislative session, which was try to deal with this issue civilly and come up with some area that compromises so that everyone feels they have gained some sort of protection for the types of things they want to do in their life. So it doesn't have to be that way, but yeah, there is that fear that it could be.
Yeah, I think we always need to be vigilant of every right, whether it's the freedom of the press, whether it is marriage rights, whatever it might be, and certainly our religious liberties. And I thought the way Utah handled it, too, was really quite amazing. And it really has been, a little bit like the Utah Compact. All of a sudden, it's being referred to around the country. And when even a very high-profile, not declared yet, but presidential candidate is using Utah as an example, that's pretty good to hear.
That's good for a change, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. You know, sometimes we get some colorful stories out of every state, and Utah sometimes seems to have more than our fair share. Rob, I always love to chat with you, not only with your background in parliamentary procedure, your role as a United States Congressman, but your love of history. How historic is what is happening inside? Outside the chamber, it's a little bit of a circus, actually. But inside of the Supreme Court, how significant is this?
Yeah, I think we chatted when I first got here about people protesting outside as if it makes some kind of difference. That is a bizarre concept that is there. It doesn't make an impact of what's happening inside the Supreme Court at all. But I think, going back to what Utah did, I think that shows the bigger context of what's going on here. In 1972, the Supreme Court denied a case that dealt with marriage, saying it wasn't a federal issue. And I think part of the throwaway lines that they used in that was dealing with these types of social issues are best left to the legislative branch. When the executive branch, their agencies, or even a court makes a decision, the people really have no recourse on if they approve or disapprove of that decision. They're kind of stuck with it. The legislative branch should be given precedence in these type of issues simply because that's where people have a chance to get their point across, right, have a chance to interact and do it. And that's why more of these decisions ought to be done in a legislative sphere than here in a court sphere or in one of the agencies. I think that's the way the system was designed. If we go back to that system, people may not get it may be the same result, just people will be more satisfied with the process, right, that produced that result.
I've even heard advocates of same-sex marriage who have said exactly the same thing. We wish that this had happened by votes of the people through the legislative bodies of the people. Why do you think this got kind of fast-tracked into the court then?
Well, everybody likes to go to the court. It is faster, even though it's not necessarily better. There are some people that actually make money taking things to the court.
Yeah.
But I think what Utah showed is that you can do it in a legislative branch, and you can do it the right way, and you can do it with people coming together and act civilly about it, and that's, I think that's the key point, that civility is not necessarily what I see going on in front of the Supreme Court right now.
Well, I'll tell you, there have been a couple of moments up there. Now, so far, at least the time that I spent in the circus, kind of a carnival environment that is out in the plaza right now, it was certainly exercised, it was certainly elevated, but nobody was going to blows. But then again, there's quite a healthy police presence out there as well. You don't want to step in the street, by the way. I found that out.
Well, and once again, if cameras are on it, if you're up close, it looks a whole lot bigger than you are from this perspective back here. It really is on the sidewalk.
Right. Back to the historic nature of this, because some very, very big decisions ultimately have been made by the Supreme Court. You were kind enough once to take me and my daughter and a friend through the Capitol, and you took us down to the old court chamber down there, and Dred Scott decision, everything down there. When we look back on this, 50 years from now, and most people are assuming that some kind of the term that I keep hearing, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Derek, just a moment ago, Derek Kitchen said, you know, the toothpaste back in the tube. Many people think in some form or fashion the idea of same-sex marriage will in some degree move forward here. How significant will that be historically?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Only time is going to be able to indicate that. But once again, it is the concept of where should these decisions be made to actually make it the most satisfying for people. There was one of the Supreme Court justices over there that kept saying that that justice agreed with Roe versus Wade, but disagreed with it being done by the courts.
Yeah, that was Ginsburg.
Well, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
didn't want to try and put that out. Yeah.
It was interesting, but she did say that, and many people think that Roe versus Wade was something that, again, and this is kind of what you've been talking about, was basically didn't go through the refiner's fire, was basically forced, if not early, on the American people in an untimely manner. And thus, it's something that has divided the nation ever since. Yeah. It still does to today.
Yeah, it is part of that concept that there is a mindset in some people on the judicial side that think if they think the executive or legislative branch has failed to act, that it's incumbent upon them to do it themselves. I disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think it's incumbent upon leaving it to the legislative branch simply because that is where the people's voice is and that's where the people have some kind of access.
Here's something maybe you can help me out with, and I've asked this question of some really smart people and people that I have some great respect for, and I've heard varying opinions. Can something like marriage, can it be decided state by state, patchwork, when it's something as sacred, as important, as human, as emotional, and as legal, when there are so many things attached to the marriage contract, is it something that could be allowed to be a mosaic with missing tiles? Can our nation function that way?
Sure, easily.
What about if you move, though, Rob?
I think this goes back to one of the questions they're having to deal with over there. And that is, the state gets involved in decisions if there is a compelling state interest. Is there a compelling state interest of having the states define what marriage is? If it's found in the Constitution, or you're trying to read it into the 14th Amendment, then they clearly have a role in saying that. If it's not, then states should be there. And the other question is, does it make a difference?
Well, what about if say, for example, if Derek and Moody are married in Utah, and somehow this Supreme Court decision goes in a way that people aren't anticipating right now, and they were to move to Indiana, where their marriage is not honored, or they were to move to Arkansas, where their marriage would not be honored. Is that not some kind of, it seems to me it almost has to be full faith and credit, you know, kind of an all or nothing.
Yeah, but there are a lot of areas in our lives where there is not that full faith and credit across borders.
So the business question licenses, is, things like
yes,
that. Right.
Does this have a significant state issue, reason? There's a phrase I can, that's, don't ever can become my age. We are the same age.
We
don't
are
ever
the
become
same.
That age.
As a matter of fact, this elm tree right here in front of us is the same age.
Yeah, this is our birthday tree here.
It's a beautiful tree, by the way. I like it.
But there is it a compelling state interest or not? And that's part of the question that has to be decided here. If it's not a compelling state interest, then having differences makes no difference. It's just part of life. And you find that in all sorts of other areas, too. It's just how we define that.
As you look at what's unfolding, I thought it was interesting today. You know, here we are back here in Washington, and normally the front page would just be covered with this, but we have Baltimore burning, mayor enacts curfew, National Guard troops to be out in mass force, and the big article on the same-sex marriage debate has been relegated to the back page of USA Today. What else is percolating in Washington today, Rob, and what else is on your agenda?
Oh, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah.
Actually, to me, the biggest issue that we face that has the long-term potential of really being devastating is sage-grouse. And we're getting prepared for that.
The governor's here.
Yes, the governor's here. We're going to be talking about that, too. But we are dealing with it on the National Defense Authorization Act because no one realizes how listing a sage-grouse could impact the readiness of our military. It would impact every range in the West. We found out that the Army is already spending $1.5 million a year for 300 birds on the Yakima Range.
Wow.
And the Air Force is already doing $200,000 a year just for pre-planning it would have an impact on our readiness. It would have an and the sad part is, the agencies of government are supposed to talk to one another. They're not. Fish and Wildlife and BLM have these little blinders on. They're dealing with their area. They don't know what the impact to the military would be. And what I'm trying to do tomorrow is say, look, I'm going to force you to talk together. And if a state has a plan of mitigation, we use the state plan, which is what the original design by Secretary Salazar was supposed to be. And we use it and give us a period of time to find out if it works or not. And that's the intelligent way of doing it. And in the meantime, we're going to force Interior to actually talk to the military. See, a couple of years ago when NASA canceled Constellation, we kept asking. It took us a couple of years to find out what impact that has on the military. And the impact was it cost us a heck of a lot more money for our missile defense because it was the same workforce that built both of them.
Right.
This is going to be the same situation if we don't get the agencies to talk about it. It's coming up tomorrow, and it's a big one, I think, for Utah.
The governor is in town right now, and I understand that he will be involved in a reception for the Japanese Prime Minister tonight. How engaged is he in the sage-grouse issue?
Well, the state is engaged big time. The governor's made a proclamation. We have a state program. The governor's association are ready to go forward with it. He's excited. He is engaged, and part of it is his office. I think he's chairman or chairman-elect.
Yeah, he's the chairman-elect and will be the chairman in July.
Yeah, and it falls into his purview, but the state has worked through this issue. The state is prepared. The state knows what it's doing, and there's nothing that says the state isn't smart enough to do it. Yeah. I think they are.
Absolutely. Rob Bishop, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's always been fun here, and actually, if you're out in the sun, it's nice and warm. You've found the cold place right
here. I know.
Here
we're under the shade of this this infamous elm that was planted the year we were born, and it's keeping us nice and cool today. Rob Bishop, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
Rob,
you.
Of course, is our first district congressman in the state of Utah.